The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Where you started with your little baby gay and being out in society and realizing it was viewed a certain way that felt dark or wrong. And then now, you know, where we are in the world and knowing our history, knowing where we've come from, and then trying to infuse the pride that we have worked so hard to find into our mentoring, so to speak, of not just our children, but just society as a whole, and showing up because we're political just by showing up and making sure we're normalizing a non-heteronormative view of what the world can be. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, we open hearts and minds like one little mind at a time. Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I am your gay host, Jamie, and this is the show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our fabulous identities. And this episode I have coming at you is a really good one. I got to sit down with Bronwyn and Eleanor. They are the hosts of a podcast called Late in 88. Which basically like unpacks queer history and helps to heal the baby gay still inside all of us. And we all still have a baby gay inside of us. This episode is really basically about parenting, but from a different angle. Instead of talking about raising kids, in this episode, we talk about reparenting ourselves and the baby gay inside of us, and healing the queer kids we used to be, creating the representation that our children need, and creating affirming communities for our children that make our families stronger. It's a good conversation. We dive into queer history. We talk about politics, all things queer. So I think you're really going to enjoy it. I'm excited that we're in season 23, and I'm excited to roll this tape for you. So I'm just going to do it because my dog is on the couch about to come in and bark at me because she wants me to play. And we don't need any more Kira bloopers. We just don't need it. So, all right, Helen, Beulah, could you come over here, please, and roll that tape? Thank you so much. Enjoy this episode, y'all. Here we go.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Bronwyn and Eleanor, hi, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming. This is going to be a fun one. It's a little bit out of the norm of what we usually talk about, but I think that everyone is really going to love this conversation and where we're going to take it, because I think everyone listening, every single person listening, is going to be able to relate to what the two of you are kind of experts on and talk about regularly, right? Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've all been baby gays, right? At some point or another, we were all little gays.
Little gays. So we're going to talk about the little gay within you.
Exactly.
Amazing.
So this is a different kind of parenting episode. It's parenting the little gay within you and reclaiming that little gay. I just made that up. I'm not sure that's where we're going to go.
Actually, what our show is all about. So you're right on it, Jamie.
Reclaiming your baby gay. So yeah, we're going to help you all at home or on your runs or in your cars, wherever you happen to be. Reclaim your baby gay today. Let's go. So without further ado, my friends, I got to put you on the spot and make you do your 30-second elevator pitch. You already told me you're slightly nervous, which makes it even more fun. Are we ready?
Okay, here we go.
On your marks, get set, go.
Okay, I'm Bronwyn Parks, and I am the co-host with my bestie, Eleanor Svoboda.
That's me.
We are the co-hosts of Late in 88, the podcast where we are two grade school classmates that explore our inner child growing up in the very conservative area of Canada in Calgary, Alberta, in the late 80s, and season two explores the grungy late 90s. And we are here to talk with Jamie and discuss all the tumultuous challenges, both working with our families and our teachers and the education system and society as a whole.
Okay. Do you want to add anything, Eleanor? We're way over. I'm just letting you know.
We're riding the wave. our podcast is We take it as a journey, and we invite our listeners to come with us to go deep inside and really look at those nooks and crevices that maybe haven't been seen. And we use our own personal story at the forefront, and then use the external context with queer history, child psychology, and a whole bunch of other stuff to understand a little bit deeper who we are as little ones and how that shaped us as queer people and how we can just love ourselves more. It's all about the love.
All about the love. Love is love. That was way over. That was way over, fellow podcasters.
Subway ride than a elevator pitch.
Yeah. But listen, you had a lot to pack. And basically, in a nutshell, what you're saying is you have been diving deep to uncover your baby gay inside of you and really figure out who that was and let your light, your little baby gay light shine, which I think we could all use, right? And what's interesting, well, there's a lot of interesting things here, but I think I might be slightly older than you because I was a teenager in the 90s as well. I'm Gen X though. I feel like I'm slightly older, but we grew up around the same time. Mm-hmm. I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah, we're born in 1980, the two of us.
Okay, 77. So
okay, very close.
I'm just slightly older. But so we're, you know, we grew up in the same time when homosexuality was a little bit different, seen differently in society. The landscape hasn't really changed that much, but it has. It really has. Mm-hmm. But it feels along a lot of the time like we take two steps forward and we take one step back. So it's changed a lot. And then there's a lot of stuff we still have to work through and push through and unravel and uncycle and break cycles of, if you catch my drift.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we, you know, doing this podcast has made me such a queer history nerd because I found really understanding that context of where things were at on a societal level was so helpful in me understanding how blocked I was as a kid, right? Because our season one is about age 8, age 9, you're not watching the news, you're not reading the newspapers, and yet you are impacted by the culture. You're impacted by the views of the culture and, you know, the nuances of how people talk about, say, gay people, if they're even talking about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I know for me, there was so much breakthrough in learning about the queer history of the time because it helped me realize why I was so repressed. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't have any role models. There was nobody on TV in the 80s. There was no one in my life who was gay. I didn't really know what I was, mm-hmm. right? All I had were all of this big mix up of feelings and mm-hmm. feeling like an outsider. So that, you know, learning that context and knowing that, you know, that in our time, it really still, like you said, wasn't that acceptable in the 80s in our city of Calgary. You know, it was still pretty fringe. There was a bit of community happening, but, you know, pride, we had our first pride in, you know, early 90s. So really there was not a lot of community there to anchor into.
Yeah. You want to add something, Bronwyn? I feel like,
well, I was just going to say that, like, and the thing is too, is that even if you felt comfortable, like one of the things we talk about a lot in our podcast is like we like to explore, like we have a lot of really vulnerable conversations. So, you know, like I was actually, my family was really cool. We had some gay people in my family. And so I was actually allowed to kind of socially transition at home. Mm. Like I was a tomboy, but like at home I was like I was just Bronwyn. So yeah. I was like in boys' clothes, playing with boys' toys. Like I was like, well, for all intents and purposes, a boy at home, mm-hmm. or like non-binary at home, I guess. Like, I didn't want to be a boy. I was just Bronwyn at home. Right. I wasn't a boy or a girl per se. But like, even if like you were young and were able, like your family was cool with it, like mine was, there was no place for you to go as a kid or a young person because of like the social stigma, like the, like we were talking, like the harmful language that was used against the queer community at that time was all around like pedophilia and mm-hmm. like, you know, homosexuals were going to sexually assault your children. you know, a lot of the rhetoric that is being used today against trans people was being used back then. Like, we, you know, it's the same script. It's just being recycled with some single words being replaced. So there was actually an aversion to queer people even like creating spaces for children in any way, because they're like, well, I can't be seen around children because, God forbid, anyone thinks that I want to harm a kid, because that's not what we're about.
Not at all.
As we learn, like, historically, even if you had all the things going for you, like I did, there was still no public place of gathering for children or people under the age of 18 or 19 or 21, like any of like legal age of majority to go to a bar or
any space. There was no space to, for anybody who was slightly, let's say, out of the box, even though I hate that, you know, like slightly different or not fitting societal norms. But like thinking about this in the 80s, I grew up in San Francisco, which is supposed to be, you know, gay Mecca. And going, I would go to the Castro district, which is the gay district, regularly because I had dance classes at the Park and Rec Center in the Castro. I don't recall my family, like at home, talking about gay much. I don't remember that being a topic of conversation. I know we had somebody who lived below us at one point, Richard, who babysat us, who was definitely gay and had boyfriends, but it was never talked about, you know. And then I remember going to the Castro district regularly. We were on the bus. We were on our own in elementary school, taking public transportation to the Castro, getting off in the Castro, and like my friends and I like pushing each other into gay bars, like to mess with us, like and like giggling when we would see two men walking together with their hands in each other's pockets. And like, I remember it being something you made fun of.
Yeah.
And it was something that, it was very clear to me that those were the others. Those were the weird ones. So I don't know if that, and I grew up in Gaytown. Do you know what I mean? So like, I don't know if that kind of pushed, kept me from really exploring myself longer than I would have. I don't know what would have helped me to like find myself earlier, but I was a slow burn. I didn't realize I had same sex attraction, as they like to say in the religious places. Like, I didn't even realize it until I was a teenager. Like, I didn't have any awakening in elementary school. And I'm wondering if it's because the society around me made fun of those people. Those people were the ones you othered, which I'm one of those people, you know, but I didn't even realize it.
It's those nuances. I think what I've realized anyways is like how much that goes in and registers. Because as a kid, you're paying attention to everything. You're learning about your world. You know, I will say our child psychologist does say that, you know, people do come into their realizations at various points. Some kids can know as young as 8, but, you know, some people it's when they're teens, and then some people it's when they're adults. So just to say, there is some psychology there too.
True, true.
You know, and then, you know, going to high school in this new season, I'm really recognizing how by the time I was in high school, I was really kind of asexual because there was so much noise in there I didn't know what to do with. I had experienced sexual trauma as a kid. So that is another layer that I feel is important to mention when it comes to unpacking the stigma on that and then your own sexuality. If your own sexuality doesn't fit the box that you're told is good, and you're already harboring shame in your body, it becomes quite complicated to like, where does this all fit? Maybe I just won't be sexual at all. And so for me anyways, by the time I hit my teen years, that's the strategy I employed. But it doesn't mean I didn't have attractions at the same time. I just was like, oh, I really want to be physically close to that friend all the time. But I didn't know that meant I was attracted to her. I don't see how that doesn't make sense, but it's so obvious. Like, I feel like that's what's been so fascinating to really look at and come at it with such a lens of compassion. Because both Bronwyn and I found that when we started approaching the teenage side of things, it was like, oh man, so embarrassing, uncomfortable, and so much self-judgment, you know? And, you know, we had people that we had interviewed in season one that we invited back who were like, yeah, I don't know if I want to talk about it. It's like, so it's been really interesting to bring up that love and be like, okay, let's do it. Let's poke the anthill. Let's go into this grimy zone and see if we can understand better what was actually going on. So it's been a ride that way.
You know what I find also kind of interesting and like a parallel here? I mean, Eleanor, you have children, so you might relate to this, but like it's the parenting of your kids. Like, you know, like I want my kids, I'm sure we all do, I want my kids to feel like they can tell me anything, and I want them to know that beyond a shadow of a doubt that I will accept them no matter what, no matter what. And I'm trying to parent them with this in mind. So I try to be open and honest about my gender expression, my sexuality, age appropriate, like, don't come at me, but like, and, and like, you know what I mean? And like,
yes,
my wife and I's relationship. And I try to be really open and honest. And both of my kids, now my 8-year-old has come to me and said, he likes a girl in class. And it was really cute. He said, Mom, I don't know what it is, but I just always want to look at her. It's really sweet, right? Aww. So he's starting to kind of, I see that he's starting to explore this. And then my 12-year-old, he's definitely like exploring the things and has come out as straight and feels that she is 100% straight. And I keep saying, well, that could change. You never know. but joking as well, just to flip the narrative.
It's okay. But, they're all born this way. Everybody, you know, it's fine.
I know. It's okay. Yeah. I love you no matter what. I love you no matter what. But thinking of all of this and thinking of our inner gay child, or just our inner child, and how terrible just figuring yourself out is, and then tying it into parenting as a queer person and the real strong desire to make sure that we are parenting them with like this inclusive lens and everything is okay lens. And also at the same time realizing I don't want to go too hard on them with this and my identity, and I don't want to push too much. So like I find this topic really actually very fascinating as both a human in the world and as a parent trying to help my kids navigate their childhoods as different as they may be from mine. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm really making much sense here.
And from my parenting position, I really value the role of community. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to, you know, yeah, me too, I'm really open about my sexuality, my past, my partner is as well, especially as they get older. I have similar ages, 9 and 13. But I really value the role of community when it comes to modeling diversity of expression of self, gender, sexuality, all of it. And it's important to me that everybody comes around the house, you know, mm-hmm. comes over for dinner, that we go out to all the cultural events, all the pride events, everything, so the kids can see it's normal for them. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting for me because I was living in Toronto, which was our biggest city here in Canada, and I was in a very diverse neighborhood. And then I just recently moved back to Alberta and I'm in a small town. And so taking that value system with me and making sure I can still do that, which I can actually, which is so cool because you have assumptions about populations and who's in them. Mm-hmm. That's been really valuable because I feel like, yeah, kids can kind of like, you can tell them as many stories as you want, but they don't care. Like, they don't think you're that interesting. They're like, yeah, I know. You loved women. Yeah, you did this. Yeah. But I feel like when it's somebody in your home who's like, they're kind of, wow, Bronwyn swears a lot. Wow, what is, you know, does Bronwyn have a they? Bronwyn's a they, them. And so then do they call their partner a wife, or do they call them a they, them too, or a husband? So then we get to have these conversations, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And each person is different, right? And so that I find a lot of value in that.
Yeah, totally.
And so like for me, like that's what this whole process has done. Like I might not be a parent, but it's really kind of opened my heart to young kids today. Like also because they are going through the same thing that I went through back then. Like they are facing the same sort of moral attacks. Like they're being debated in the highest levels of government.
You're talking about trans kids or just kids in general?
Well, trans kids, queer kids, you know, because the thing is those rules and regulations don't just affect trans kids, right? They affect young girls who don't present as typically feminine, right? Like, I'm not trans. Like, back when I was a teenager, I'm not trans at that time, but I also didn't present as traditionally feminine. Like, I'm 5'11", I am, like, husky, like, build, you know? Like, I am not a, like, waifishly thin feminine girl either. So I could have been just as easily accused as being trans on the high school basketball team. And then what, you're going to examine me?
Right. Well, that's what I was speaking with one of the higher ups at Family Equality. I was on a panel with them. Luz was her name. And she said, and one of my favorite things that anybody's ever said is, rights for us actually helps everybody. Like, giving us special rights, I'm putting that in quotation, it helps the whole society. We're not asking for anything special. It will help you as well. And to your point with girls' sports, and like, I have been in fights with people in my school community when there was a debate going on in our school board about taking inclusive sports policies away and rejiggering them and, you know, making it harder for trans kids to play on the teams that they felt they should play on. I had so many arguments with people that, like, how are you going to police this? How are you going to police girls and girls? It just hurts people. If the policy you are trying to push actually ends up hurting another portion of people, then you're not doing the right thing, you know?
And the whole thing is absurd anyway. Like, and this also flies in the face of, like, actual science around, like, trans people in sports to begin with. Because you'll also notice that no one is talking about trans men in sports.
Mm-mm.
Right?
No, it's just
because it falls from the patriarchal misogyny around the fact that, like, oh, men are inherently better than women, despite the fact that there is a trans man boxer who is, like, dominating, like, the amateur boxing league right now. But no, there's no problem with the trans man in boxing dominating. But like, one, like, trans woman swimmer got silver ahead of some woman who didn't take losing very well, and now all of a sudden it's a national crisis.
And she's inherently just better than the rest of the women on the team because male at birth, better, just better.
And this is the thing, is like, it's these attacks, you know, are things that we heard as teenagers as well. Right.
Against gay people.
Like in Alberta, you know, I got into a huge fight with a friend of mine who was conservative in high school. Like, he voted, like, he was older. He was a couple years older, and he voted for the conservative government. And I was really angry. And he's like, well, I don't understand. Like, it's not such a big deal. And I said, it's absolutely a big deal. Like, you voted to say that I can't get married. Like, you could go to the bar tomorrow, pick up a girl whose name you don't even know, marry her.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's no problem. But I could be in love with somebody for 10 years and you just voted for somebody who said, I can't get married.
But voting to let me get married to a woman, actually, you still can just pick up that woman in the bar and marry her. So, like, it doesn't affect you in any freaking way. You still have all the rights in the world. You still do.
But he did that because he's fiscally conservative.
Right.
So he's like, well, but this is better for...
It's all about money. It's all about money.
I'm like, yeah, because you're a millionaire who manages a gas bar. Like,
The people who came up to me and were like, I voted for Trump, but it's really financial for me. It's all about the finances and the... Shut the fuck up. Like, don't even... Why are you telling me this? Don't talk to me anymore. Like, you're looking in my face and saying, I voted against you because of money. That's a great argument.
That makes me feel so much better.
Yeah. Like, what are you thinking? What do you think? And then the people who said, do you really think it's going to affect you someday? Do you really think this vote is going to... Yeah, Sarah. I just picked a name out of my ass. Yeah.
Whatever.
Charlie.
Yeah,
it did.
Sheila.
Fucking Charlie.
Yeah, you fuck. Like,
how are you,
like,
feeling now, Charlie? You with Tucker Carlson?
Yeah. Sorry, you and Tucker. I mean, like, ugh.
Love is love is love is love. Love is love.
As the queer history nerd over here, I mean, I do feel like this is another drive in us. Why it's so important to record our past and the stories of the past and the context of the past, because when somebody comes up to you and says, well, it's not a big deal, like, look, you can get married. It's like, that's only been for like 20 years. And that's not a long time.
And that's in Canada.
And that's in Canada. Not even 20 years. Sorry, that's in Canada. States. I apologize. But that it's so important for us to remember our context and our history. So we know that, yeah, like this is brand new. Like, it has not even been legal for that long.
You know? I just spoke to a couple that was closeted for 40 years.
That is self-preservation. That's survival.
Exactly.
Right. And so our historian, who is a decade older than us, when we talked to him, Kevin Allen is his name. He's a queer historian that his specialty is Calgary. So the city that we grew up in, you know, he was saying that for him as a Gen Xer, you know, coming up in high school, coming out was just not possible. Like it was not a thing. So here we are coming up a decade later, and Bronwyn did come out in high school. And that, I think that they were the only one, but that still, like the fact that it was starting to happen a decade later, right? So that's 1998. Then you think 2008, 2018, now we're here, 2026. Not that long ago. So keeping that history close by and understanding all that, I feel is really important, and people need to know. Like I have another project I'm working on that has to do with Alberta queer history. And I had a neighbor, I was telling a neighbor of mine about it, and she goes, Alberta has queer history? And I went,
every place does, Lord.
But every place does. Every street corner,
every place,
plot of land,
every country in the world has gay history.
Most of these walls could talk.
Right? And most of it is buried and quiet and silenced. And I just really encourage all the listeners out there to start digging about where you grew up and start learning about maybe a bit of the history, a little bit of bits and pieces of queer history. It is so nourishing as a queer person to get that little piece and realize, wow, there are these people who are fighting to figure it out and make it work. And these elders who came before us, who held the line under such great risk. It really inspires you to continue that fight and to continue holding that line. It's like, yeah, we've built off what came before us, but the fight isn't over.
The fight is still the same, actually. It's just, to Bronwyn's point, it has moved to a slightly different demographic of umbrella. It's the same exact rhetoric. It's the same exact arguments. They are just targeting us even smaller bracket of the whole umbrella, right? Now we have to fight for that bracket. Now we have to fight really hard. And those of us who can show up and who have the ability to fight, because some people have to hide. Some people have to hide.
Yeah.
But those of us who don't have to, we need to show up extra strong. Because, like, have you ever, like, all these people who are fighting for girls' sports and all the things, like, have never even met a trans little girl.
That's right.
You've never even met a little trans girl. You have no idea. Actually, you're looking at one right now and you had no idea. You know what I mean? Like, they don't necessarily look like what you think they look like. Stop. Stop with your heteronormative, like, patriarchal bullshit.
Well, and the inner repression, right? Which I think for us, like, even, again, in our podcast, it's like we're going after the parts of us that are still wounded and broken around our queerness. And, you know, there's still room to repair there. And I think everybody has room to repair because we've all been hurt by this society, right? And all hurt by the repression and the everything we're talking about. So that, you know, I was thinking about that after your question about parenting as well, is that I for me anyways, as a parent, feel that the biggest aspect of parenting, I was expecting it, but not in the ambushy kind of way it can come, where it really calls you on your own stuff, right? It really calls you on your own inner blocks sometimes, right? Your own conditioning, your own ways of understanding the world or yourself or what you think love is, what you think, you know. So doing this work through the podcast has been unbelievably liberating because I've got, thank God I'm not alone, because I don't think I'd do it without Bronwyn. And as artists, we have this bizarre impulse to go into the dark, complicated places and to make sense of them.
Yeah.
And I do think that that is a really important aspect because the people who go after our community are repressed.
So 100%.
Really, they need some healing, man. And you got to want it. You got to want to do the work. And that's where the block is. And that's, again, where community is so important, because if you met a human being who was trans or queer and you realized, oh, wow, they're a person. But that's just too simple when it comes to politics.
And I think that's the most important part, too, is that, like, what we didn't have when we were younger is, like, both because of the AIDS crisis, which wiped out a huge swath of our community and also sidelined a whole swath of our community. Like, even those that survived were, like, seriously ill and dealing with massive mental health crises around, like, what was going on. If they weren't, like, both dealing with that, they were also trying to help those, right? Like, between the lesbian and the leather community and everything else, like, those that weren't actively ill were trying to help those who were ill. Our community now has us as elders.
Right. Oh, God, that's so scary when you say that. Like, you poor things.
Like, I know. But, like, we are...
You're the elder.
We have also more rights today than our elders did back then.
100%.
So, like, despite the fact that in many states in the United States, our rights are eroding, and even up here in Canada, our rights are being eroded, we still, to this day, have more rights as a queer community collectively, and more organizations supporting us, and more public support. Even within the Republican Party, we have more public support and social support than we did in the 80s and 90s. And that is something that the youth today, like, that is definitely something that I think we as a community need to, like, show up more for them.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
And I think that's sort of, like, that's the beauty of your podcast and your audience. Like, there are queer families today, right?
Like, lots of us
that are just, like, living out large. Like, I remember I only knew of, like, one, like, only I had one friend who had, like, queer dads, very fortunately.
She's going to be on the podcast.
And she's on our podcast. Ooh, yeah, one of my best friends had two dads.
We are everywhere now. It's true. But even everywhere is still sparse and few and far between. But there's so many of us. And, you know, but you brought up a really good point before we started recording, Bronwyn, about how our identities are just politicized. Us living in the world is political.
Yeah.
Us being is just political. It has been politicized, which is a burden and also a blessing, I feel like, because we can move a lot of hearts and minds by just showing up, those of us who can show up and be...
Just live out and proud.
Yeah, just like, just showing up is political. And those of us who can need to show up even louder and prouder and to help those who can't. And then the way we, those of us who are parenting our kids to... not just think of the heteronormative inside the box way of life, like we were like we grew up. I'm holding a little baby dinosaur here.
I love
just it. Just because my child just puts things on my desk and then
I'm
I fiddle with them.
I'm a big fan of dinosaurs. Like, don't you worry. I got, like, all these, like, toys. I got, like, Optimus Prime over here chilling
we're so,
out.
We're so queer. Like, this
came
is
off my
so
floor.
Queer.
I cleaned it off my floor. I got on camera and it was on my floor. I was like, oops.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. But, like, there are a lot of us now, right? To your point, there are a lot of us who are parenting our kids to be inclusive and open of all identities and welcoming to all identities. And we talk to our kids about this kind of stuff regularly. And I think that there's hope that the generations that we're raising are the ones that are really coming up. The youngins are really going to change the world. That's my hope. And my 12-year-old had a boyfriend, has a boyfriend. I don't even like, ugh, it like grosses me out to say it, but like, I'm sorry. I don't mean to say it grosses me out, but it's like, no, we're not, fair. I don't want to be there yet. Yeah, I don't want to be fair. There. Anyway, so, and she got in a fight with him. And I'm so proud of the way she responded. She kissed her girlfriend on the cheek at lunch or something. And he got all upset. He said something he shouldn't have. And she was like, we broke up, mom. Nobody talks to me like that. I was raised by liberal lesbians. Nobody gets to talk to me like that. Also, he was being low-key homophobic. And I told him because I can kiss whoever I want.
Low-key. That's sus.
So sus. That's sus. That's like, that's, she got Riz. She was like, I was like, okay. She was, I have it written in text. I was raised by liberal lesbians. Nobody talks to me that way.
I am dead.
She's fine. She's gonna
okay,
be fine.
Let's go. The kids are all right. They're all right. And then, but then they did make up, which I was like, what? She texted a couple days later. She's always texting us. She was like, moms, don't be mad. I know you're going to be mad, but I decided to get back with him. Well, God. So he came over for dinner last night and we made sure that the conversation was so freaking gay.
Yep.
We were like talking about, oh, this homophobic thing happened today. Let me tell you about it. We were like, it was like, oh, God. So I'm amazing. Trying to raise the friends of my children, too. To be to normalize these conversations and to normalize this stuff.
It's the day to day, though. Again, in our podcast, that's what I really recognize. It's like, it's the big events, sure. But I think the day to day is more potent. And in parenting, it's the day to day, too. Like how the words you're using, how you're acting around others. And, you know, same thing, like my daughter had she does these movie parties. She loves to throw parties. She's a party girl. And one of her friends, she had the face paint out, put a rainbow on her cheek, right? Mm-hmm. And that was part of whatever character. And one of her friends took her aside and said, you know, that's the gay symbol, right? And I was like, literally just like there watching and be like, yeah, that is the gay symbol. Mm-hmm. Like, pretty awesome. Isn't that great? And then her friend was like, circuits. Mm-hmm. I could tell her brain was just like, good. But I just was like emanating like, isn't it great? Like, did you see my flag over there? Yeah, I'm like, it's great. It's like, it's great, right? But I knew that that was not the message she was getting at home. I knew she came from a traditional home. So it was just like taking up space to give her maybe a moment of a different experience. I'm not shaming her. No. I'm not like bringing a heavy rhetoric in. But I'm showing her that there's a different reality than maybe what she's been exposed to up until that moment.
Yeah.
And her friend, the girl with the rainbow was like, look at a rainbow. She walked away.
I love rainbows.
It's these intersecting, right? Because we talk a lot about that too. It's like, what do you have at home, right? And mm-hmm. and those developmental moments of when you're coming, because I grew up in a very traditional home, right? Old school European parents, older generation, you know, like, so... You know, how does that go when that interfaces with the external? And when we have our kids' friends over, we're part of that. Like, we're mm-hmm. part of that alternate influence. You know, which I can remember as a kid being really important going into other families' homes and seeing how other families lived. Like, oh my God, can you imagine going to a queer family's house when you're a kid? Right? I mean, Bronwyn had gay uncles, but like,
that's amazing. Still,
like, it's like going over to your friend's house and it's like, anyways.
Gay. Yeah. Where you started with your little baby gay and being out in society and realizing it was viewed a certain way that felt dark or wrong. And then now, you know, where we are in the world and knowing our history, knowing where we've come from, and then trying to infuse the pride that we have worked so hard to find into our mentoring, so to speak, of not just our children, but just society as a whole and showing up because we're political just by showing up and making sure we're normalizing a non-heteronormative view of what the world can be. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, we open hearts and minds like one little mind at a time. Like I got that boy last night. I got him.
He'll never forget it.
Yeah, you'll never forget it.
He won't.
But that's what I mean. Like, it's important, right? Like, that's what you're talking about, showing up. And even the little moments are sometimes the most potent, you know, of how we can illuminate. So you said that so beautifully.
I don't know if I said anything beautifully. And then there was one time I really did shame one of the friends because just to show that nobody's perfect. When my daughter was like six, we had like this play date with a bunch of kids. And one of the girls was like, ew, how do you have two moms? And I heard it. Like she said it like in my earshot. And I flipped around. I said, well, why do you not?
Ew, yeah. How do you have a dad?
It sucks to be you.
I did. And then I had to check myself because I was ready to go further. And then had to check myself. And then I was like, oh, shit, she's going to go home and tell her mom.
That's the last time I'll see that kid.
Yeah. Oh, but, so like, it's a learning process. But we are, you know, like, I think podcasts like yours are important because, like you said, we need to know our history. We need to nurture our baby gays. I think it's really good it's super queer to go deep on these dark parts of being human.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to carry the trauma forward, right? If you really want to be part of the change that has to happen, I believe it has to happen within as well.
Yeah.
Is to unpack where you carry any of that internalized homophobia or transphobia or just like repression. It's like, where did I shut down who I really am? And knowing that really hurts me every day, right? That hurts my life. That hurts my ambitions. That hurts my family because I'm not loving them as much because I'm not loving me as much, you know? So it's really, I feel, essential work to playing our part in the society we want to see.
Yeah, agreed. And I did have this realization like a month ago, and then I'm going to ask you a question about your second season, and then we have to wrap up because I feel like I'm talking your ears off. But
hey, I love it. It's all good.
I had a realization the other day, like a month or two ago, where I was just sitting there and I went, damn, I'm glad I'm gay. Damn. Like, yes. Like, and it felt so affirming. Like, have you had those where you're just like, fuck yeah, I'm gay.
Every fucking day of my life. I'm like, I am so
amazing.
So glad I'm gay and as fuck.
Yeah, because
I wouldn't want to be anything else.
Because
than who I am
what
today.
Would our lives be if we didn't have this that forces us to push up against those societal norms? Like, what would we be?
Yeah.
I don't
exactly.
know.
Two-dimensional.
Who knows? Right. I am a multidimensional gay-ass being, and I appreciate it and love it.
By the way, you can tell your kids that non-binary or not, I still say wife.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just
because
saying,
when we
they
go
ask
out,
me that question.
Because when we go out, I want it to be very clear that we're a gay couple. Like, I really want to beat people over the head with the gayness.
Yeah, because that's our mission.
When we're in Home Depot.
It's the gay agenda. Yeah, exactly.
That is the gay agenda. I must spread the gay.
We spread it. We're spreading
it. You know,
it.
At the bank, at the Home Depot. Anyway.
The goal is to make
everyone
gay.
Is Home Depot Canadian, though?
No, it's American.
Is it?
It's American.
Oh, yeah. Okay. They donated to the Trump campaign and everything. Oh. I try not to shop there, actually.
Okay.
There's a lot of places we can't shop anymore. Like, it's getting hard. It's getting real hard. Mm-hmm. It's really challenging.
I'm trying to use American brands, okay? I would normally shop at a different place, but I'm actively trying to use American brands.
That don't support Trump?
Well, yeah. I meant in speaking in the podcast, like, otherwise I go to a local lumberyard called Slig.
Good job. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, yeah, that's great. So next season, you're delving into the teenage years and loving your gay teenage selves and diving into the dark parts and the not so dark parts. And so people can go over there and find some healing, perhaps, because we all could use a little bit of healing, and a little bit of history and a little bit of information. And let's just keep it gay, y'all. Let's keep it queer. Come on. Let's keep it queer because the world needs it.
And I just want to say, too, that we, you know, one of the reasons that we were also inspired to do this podcast initially was around both of our journeys of our gender identity as well, because the language around gender identity really didn't exist when we were young. And and in gratitude to this generation who's really blossomed with identifying, you know, the place of gender fluidity and, you know, whether it's trans or gender fluid or non-binary, it's been such a gift for those of us who didn't know where to put that, you know, how to language those aspects of ourselves. So actually, the initial inspiration, one of the initial inspirations was a love letter to, hey, kids, we're going to show you what it was like when we didn't know how to use language around this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, you know, and like through those steps. So, you know, both sexuality and gender are really wrapped into our podcast and both of our individual journeys, which, you know, are kind of opposite, but also the same. So I think that's what's interesting about it too, is both Bronwyn and I have had pretty different trajectories and how we expressed ourselves, how we came to know who we are and are continuing to evolve in our identity. So yeah, it's been really fun.
I love that. And I love that we do owe some gratitude to the younger generation. It's not all us. You don't always have to thank us. We thank you for...
No, really.
Like, really. Like, seriously, you opened our eyes to the entire sphere, and it's growing and it keeps evolving. And that's thanks to the young people. So...
Yeah. Really.
We're just getting better and better.
I had androgynous. That's as much as I had, you know? So to be able to find my way to express myself on the gender spectrum through the current language, which I'm sure will continue to evolve, has been a great gift.
Yeah.
We had Grace Jones. That was long live
and David
Jones.
Bowie. And David Bowie.
Grace Jones and David Bowie.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton. That's it.
Boy George too.
Oh, Boy George.
Does that count?
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, George. Like Sinead O'Connor, just because of the shaved head, it was like an inspiration too, you know. We really had to weave it in. We had to be like the bald head, like, you know, you had to like
a little
fill
this,
in
little
the
that.
Dots. Yeah. You had to be like, no, that tracks. That works. Kind of how I feel in the world, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
But anyway, this was great. Tell everybody where they can find your show, where they can find you in all the places so everybody can go.
All right. Well, you can find us on all social media platforms. Well, all of them. Mainly, you can find us on Instagram and TikTok at late.in.88. You can find us online at latein88.com. And on Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, all your favorite podcasting platforms at latein88. You can binge listen the entire first season. I guess you can kind of watch it on YouTube as well, at latein88 on YouTube. Season 2 is out now. Listen to your heart's content.
Listen to both seasons.
Listen to everything.
Yeah, get into it. It's a journey. We welcome you to join us.
Yeah, your summer podcast.
Come
binge.
And play.
Yes. Well, thank you both so much. This has been awesome. And
thank you.
I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Love
thank
it.
You. Thanks for all that you do with this podcast, Jamie. It's awesome.
Yeah, cheers. Great
no
to meet
problem.
You.
No problem. Yeah, great to meet you too.
Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.